This is Twit.
I want to start with Far Cry 5. It looks intense and very timely and kind of also terrifying at the same time. Basically, it's an open world game that will deal with religious fanaticism in Montana, which I can't help but think of the guy just elected to Congress who body slammed a reporter from Montana the other day. But nonetheless, this is a video game and not a real thing, but it looks like it could be a real thing and hitting on some interesting topics. Tell us all about this.
Sure. Yeah. I was invited to a pre-E3 event in Los Angeles last week. And that is when a producer for Ubisoft Montreal came in and kind of scared the crap out of everybody in the room. Dan Hay works for Ubisoft Montreal. He's creative director, executive producer there. Deep voice, big imposing guy. And he starts telling some really intense stories about his vision of America, how that was affected long ago, and how he'd always wanted to make one of the Far Cry games, which normally go to very exotic international locations, and make it inside the United States. He was trying to figure out how to do that, and he started thinking about this idea of tension and pressure within the United States. And he said the subprime mortgage crisis and the Oregon militia takeover from early last year were sort of these two things that hand in hand made him say, America's kind of messed up. So he pushed through a plan to create an entire cult inside of rural Montana, a full compound with leaders, an actual cult expert Ubisoft hired to help figure out how cults work and create a convincing cult compound. By the way, that's a job that I totally want to be the cult expert. That's yeah, cult advisor for video games. Why not? So what we end up with, first off, we have not played the game. We simply have pretty much what you guys showed in the video version. We also saw a little bit of a first-person gameplay style thing. We actually saw the game seem to be played. And so Far Cry games kind of stick you in a random crazy world with a gun and a prayer. And you have to survive, you have to hunt, you have to find vehicles, find allies. And that appears to be happening just in Montana. So you're going to be going through cities, going through the woods, getting into planes, getting onto little like four-wheelers, dune buggy style vehicles. There's an 18-wheeler. I'm not sure if you drive it or just hang out and get supplies from it. There will be hunting and fishing. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if fishing had been in other Far Cry games, but and there will be other... Dan would not reveal a lot of stuff. I kept trying to ask about different systems and things and how allies would work. But, you know, very grandiose sales pitch, yeah, including some really messed up stories that he and everyone at Ubisoft swore me to not repeat. There was a group of 20 press and he said, we're never going to tell these specific stories. Do not repeat them. So, which I find interesting because I can't fact check some of the stuff they said. It's very crazy, but it sounds like there's some weird stuff happening behind the scenes to get this game made is pretty much all I can say.
Wow, Sam, I wish you wouldn't have said that because now I just want to know what you know that we'll never know. You're killing me here. You're killing me here. But Far Cry 3, you're like you're vacationing and they went wrong and you're abducted by pirates. Far Cry 4, you're dealing with like a Himalayan civil war. In this game, you're in Montana, like we said, dealing with religious fanatics. And as you mentioned, you have to find allies and get through things. Did they mention whether or not like you'd be able to choose which side you're on? Like, could people choose to be on the side of the zealots or of the, I don't want to say normals, but, you know, the people who aren't maybe into this cult? Like, what are the kind of different choices people can make? Or have they not said yet?
We had zero information about how you will eventually complete the story. Everything was set up to be about taking on the cult. Although some specific information about how the game starts was revealed, and we're not allowed to say that until the game comes out. But
teasers.
We were told about these allies. There's three little videos, and we have Jerome the pastor, who's a dude who's got a Bible in one hand and a shotgun in the other, and he is not a fan of the cult, which has this father, son, very biblical overtone sort of stuff going on. And there's two others. There's a former pilot and mechanic who helps you like rig up airplanes and put guns on them. And there's a woman who runs a bar whose father used to run the bar, and he went through some stuff as a result of the cult, so she wants revenge. So it sounds like your job is going to be, to some extent, to find other people who have been affected by this cult and ally with them and take them down. However, I imagine the shades of gray are going to be intense, because Dan did seem to empathize to some extent with this sense of anti-American, anti-government sensation. The sense of who's got their hands on the wheel in the American government is the question that he thinks a lot of people are asking. That seemed to be a lot more of his sentiment than it was about, for example, anti-Obama sentiment. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I do think this is going to be really interesting once the game comes out, which won't be until February of next year. So that is some time. But when it comes out, we're going to have a lot of questions as to what does and does not get covered and how it gets covered in terms of the myriad things that anti-American sentiment inside of America consists of. Is this going to talk about race? Is it going to talk about class? What kind of topics are we going to get into in a game that, for all intents and purposes, is throwing you out with guns and running around going yeehaw? Like, how is that really going to work if it's a game that's supposed to be fun? It's a question nobody had a real answer for that yet, and there's a lot of time to answer it.
Is there skiing in it? Because that's what I like to do in Montana.
Good question.
I did not see any snow in any of the footage, okay, but I am certainly not the keeper of their skiing, snowboarding, snow machining, and DLC, add-on packs, expansion packs. They could certainly have, you know, the snowy Montana secret second cult to take down or something. I don't know.
Well, switching gears a little bit, the reviews for Rime are in, and they're mostly good. Rime is a game that's out for the PlayStation 4, the Xbox One, and the Nintendo Switch, and many critics say the game is beautiful and fun, but a little bit too much like Zelda, The Last Guardian, Shadows of the Colossus, a lot of really great, beloved games. Sam, have you given this game a shot? What do you think of all the reviews that we've seen so far?
So I'm careful to read other reviews because I'm still working on mine. Also, just a correction, it is not out on the Switch yet. It'll come later this year, quote unquote. It is out on Steam on Windows, and that's how I've been playing it. And I don't really care what other people are saying in terms of negativity. This game has been in production forever. I want to say since 2011,
years, right?
2012.
Yeah.
Something. Yeah. It was supposed to come out back in 2013 on the older Xbox 360. It was a deal that this company called Tequila Works had signed, and Tequila Works has put out like nothing. They had a game called Deadlight that was very boring. It was about Seattle and it was made by Spaniards, and I, as Seattleite, hated that fact. But that they totally switched gears with this game. The footage, anyone watching the video footage can see this very colorful open world island sort of environment in which you're this little boy with like a red scarf running around solving puzzles with story that's unfolding with no words. It's all visual. So this ends up following in the footsteps of some games you mentioned. So there's a little bit of a Zelda shadow, but certainly Shadow of the Colossus, Ico, The Last Guardian, these sorts of those three games are all made by the same team over at Sony, their Japanese studio. And they are landmarks in terms of games as art, games that unfold in this very cinematic way, but it's interactive, which means the story unfolds. It's not just sitting there throwing text at you. You're not just looking for little email documents hidden in a cupboard like in BioShock or things like that. This is about evoking a feeling through visual stuff proceeding as you interact. So all that is to say, Rime is one of the more delightful entries in that genre of interactive narrative game where you push the narrative forward by solving puzzles, running around, and interacting in very subtle, simple ways. This is not an incredibly complex game. The biggest knock I would have against it is that it is not this riveting puzzle game where it's really difficult. It's, in fact, kind of hand-holdy. But I would say this is right there at maybe not the best Studio Ghibli or Steven Spielberg film, but imagine those two coming together to make something that was like close to their best. Like, if you love that genre, you'll like this genre. It definitely feels, when I play it, I'm always snapping screenshots. It's one of the more beautiful games I've played in some time, just in terms of the way color and giant structures and random little creatures come popping out. I keep snapping the snapshot screenshot button as I play it because I just it just is this kaleidoscope of beauty and color. Really, it feels like opening up an old clamshell Disney VHS case. That's what I feel Wow. like when I'm playing Rhyme. So if that sounds like a thing you want to do where it is meaningfully interactive in terms of selling a story but is not throwing a bunch of text at you and is not super difficult, I think that's a niche. And not everyone's going to love it. I love it. I really like Rhyme.
Just so you know, I'm not the only one that asks these questions, but Loquacious in our chat room would like to know if she can play a little girl or do you have to only play a little boy?
As far as I know, you start out as this little boy. And I'm not sure, I don't want to spoil necessarily whether that ties into anything, but there are details about a family and about perhaps the boy is someone else. So it's not like Minecraft where you're just able to project yourself or playing a boy or a girl is equal. There may very well be something about the fact that you're a boy, but I'm not going to answer that for this broadcast. I do like when games afford a plot that has room for you to be a male or a female or to be a lot of other options. This is not one of those games.
So when can we expect your review?
Coming up this weekend. I have a lot of video gaming to do while the sun is out in Seattle, so that'll be up this weekend at Ars Technica.
Awesome. Fantastic. I gotta say, there's not a lot of games out there where you get to play as a person of color, as the central hero, the main person. So to see a little brown boy running around on the screen, being a brown boy myself, like that's pretty exciting and kind of rare. I'm super excited to play that. But another big game that a lot of folks are looking, way more people probably are looking forward to this than Rhyme, is Destiny 2. And over the last few days, we've learned a ton about Destiny 2. And I want to ask you, you know, Bungie, they're talking about, you know, this whole plan for hybrid servers, and we'll get to that. But first, let's talk about the gameplay we've seen so far. It sounds like on PCs, we're going to get 4K, 60 frames per second. That sounds pretty great. Let's talk about Destiny 2. It looks pretty great. I mean, is it going to be great?
So I was invited while I was in this Los Angeles pre-E3 event. I was invited to the big Destiny 2 gameplay reveal last week. And I know there are a lot of stories that have come out of that. What hasn't come out is that PC gameplay. You'll be able to play the game on a bunch of different systems. So Xbox One, PlayStation 4, the souped-up versions of both of those being Project Scorpio and PlayStation 4 Pro, respectively, if that's not confusing, and then also Windows computers. And I was very excited to get mouse and keyboard and sit down with the PC version, and they had quite a system. 1080 Ti graphics card, which retails for about $700. That is top of the line in terms of consumer grade for video cards right now, and all the other bells and whistles in the computer. And I was blazing away 4K resolution, 60 frames a second. And those numbers matter because when you're playing on console, you don't get 60 frames a second. That's only 30 frames a second that refresh. And the reason that's meaningful is because Bungie's roots as the makers of Halo were always in these 60 frame a second experiences. That's how the best Halo games have played, where you've had this very crisp, high speed refresh that feels that stuff really matters in this beat to beat shooty shoot when you're just aiming guns around and shooting around. And Destiny 2, just by default, feels better with that doubled super high frame rate, but it's not going to come to console, that frame rate. And the PC version is going to be delayed. There's no sense of exactly when it's coming out, but it almost certainly will not be out September 8th, which is when the Xbox and PlayStation versions will be out. But I loved getting to sit and play it on the computer. And I also really had a good first blush with it. And that's how I felt about the first Destiny. Destiny is always been good at just putting you in a situation, having interesting enemies, interesting missions. The problem is the first one makes you repeat a lot of stuff over and over and over. It's not very compelling to keep on coming back to. It's essentially a short loop that you're expected to repeat a lot. I got tired of that game after about 7-8 hours. I kept trying to go back. I kept getting bored. And Destiny 2 may be built to be fresh and interesting 8 hours, 16 hours, 24 hours, 100 hours, and on. But that's something that we're going to have to wait a lot longer. I think that's going to be weeks after the game comes out in September for us to have a true answer as to whether it's going to be a game that lasts. But it felt really good. It felt like there was more stuff to do in that beat to beat. Not a ton, though. It feels incredibly familiar, and there are a lot of people on the internet who think it's a little underwhelming. I think they expected a lot more.
Did they talk at all about narrative or story? You know, for me, like you, it was fun, and at first it was like, okay, this could be something I could get into, and then over time, because of the repetition, because of the loop, it wasn't as exciting and kind of lost my interest. Did they talk at all about whether there would be maybe a better narrative or story there for Destiny 2? Because that was a criticism that a lot of people, myself included, had of the original.
I mean, we got to see the setup that everything has been wiped. You start Destiny 2 as this souped up killer and, well, not killer, but a hero guardian. And then there's this great evil that takes over your town or the Citadel, pardon me. And you're back to zero. You have been killed in a way that you come back super weak and you're building up from that. And it looks like they're showing these little cinema scenes where you're seeing more people who don't have helmets on. Mm-hmm. There may be towns that are full of real people and characters that are developed that you interact with in a meaningful way. Because that certainly wasn't the case in Destiny 1. Destiny 1 was essentially rushed out with most of its original story thrown into the trash. There was a real weird upheaval that happened. A little bit's been put on the record about that, but nobody's exactly sure what the heck was going on with Bungie as they were trying to get that game out the door. So, I'd like for it to be good, but again, we had a very limited amount of time to really play what was on offer. And also, Destiny is about emergent stories in which you group up with some people and you kind of have a chat room experience. So having this really drawn out specific story is more of a single player experience. And I don't know that Bungie's ever going to go back to that in the way that they did with the original Halo games, which they were kind of cheesy and cliched, but they did do their best to develop this sort of core set of characters who interacted with each other. And that really carried you through the campaign. I don't know that Destiny will ever be built for that.
It's interesting that you mentioned that because I think of Overwatch, which is a game that really isn't built around like a central narrative, but it's been so embraced by people online doing just that, what Destiny is kind of built around, which is like getting together with your friends and going, doing missions and kind of creating your own narrative, that people have found their own stories. Of course, I'm sure Bungie wouldn't say, hey, we want to like copy some Overwatch stuff. But, you know, my hope is that kind of maybe something like that could happen where there's emerging of the narrative and this kind of group play idea and concept.
Well, they did talk about guilds, the idea that you can get this group together, you'll have concurrent progress a little bit more nimbly and baked into the game than last time. And then there's this also sort of thing where you can be a lone wolf who fills in the missing cracks. So there's a guild who needs, you know, one more person for a 6-person mission. They grab a lone wolf and the lone wolf doesn't have to stay with the clan and they could potentially join up or whatever. But that to me was a whole lot of talk and no action. I don't know what the heck they're going to do to connect players together, but they definitely don't like people playing by themselves. And I know at Ars Technica, a lot of our readers want these sort of adventure games where you're building experience, getting loot, getting further and further. They want to play by themselves. They want to chill out. They don't want to have other people. They don't want voices in their headset. They're, you know, that old guard that likes how Bungie makes shooting games and makes them big and occasionally has other people come in. They don't want that commitment to a clan, as it were. So I am super curious whether Bungie's insistence that you have to play with other humans is going to really pay off in a way that everyone loves. So we'll have to see, because they have to build a fun sandbox. I think Overwatch just happens to be a good game. Nobody had it built specifically with chat or social things in mind. It's just, oh, people like it and they're finding ways to share it. They're getting on Twitch and so on. Bungie should probably just be careful to make it a fun game that people then glob onto, as opposed to, we're building all the things to make it very social and streamable. Like, just make a good game first, then we'll meet you there halfway.